it's Laura, and tonight I have Dylan from Creepy Unsolved podcast and his brother Brandon here. We discuss their experiences as they grew up in a haunted house. We also discuss trips that they have taken out into the woods when they have gone hunting. Before we start, if you have an encounter you would like to share, email me at midnight_inthemountains@yahoo.com. All right, let's go. Hey, Dylan. Hey, Brandon. How are you guys doing today?
Great. Thanks for having us on here. We're looking forward to this episode.
Me too. Thanks for joining me.
So, yeah, you know, we talked a little bit about this before we ended up airing or recording today. You know, previously, me and you, Laura, we've shared our experiences, and me and my brother have a lot of conjoined experiences with our past and different houses we lived in and different times messing around with Ouija boards and, you know, voices in the woods and stuff along that those lines. So I thought it'd be a great opportunity to come on here and to share these with you and your audience. So can you hear me good, Brandon?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure you're still here when we get ready to begin. So, you know, let's go right into this, Brandon, and we'll go back to, you know, South Main Street in the Big Blue House. So we, you know, we kind of moved around every couple of years growing up, and nothing like, you know, losing a house or anything along those lines, no financial issues or anything about that, just like kind of moving up every step we went until my mom eventually bought a house on Cartier Street later. So this would have been the house we lived in after the Blue House. But while we were there, we had a handful of strange, you know, what I would call encounters with the paranormal. Now, to me personally, these are not anything like way out there or like completely terrifying to me on my part from the ones I experienced. Brandon might have a different perspective on these. But while I was there, I, you know, I've experienced voices. Like when I was alone up late in the morning or in the early morning, sitting downstairs on the computer, I would hear like voices from time to time, like almost like in my ear saying my name. And like going on later in life, like I shared these experiences with my mother and she heard the same thing, just like voices when she was alone, like up close in your ear, like almost like you could feel the breath of someone speaking. So I don't know if you've had any experiences like that, Brandon, along those lines. If you do, do you want to share them?
Yeah, I mean, living in the house is always kind of weird. You always had like a feeling like something was watching you and this and that. And like I've had the same experiences like you, how you'll be sitting down there late at night on the computer and you'll hear somebody like whisper your name. And it might be because you're tired and you need to go to bed or something, something along those lines. But I remember I used to have like this dream all the time because where my bedroom was in the closet, there was actually an attic. And I remember multiple different times I had this dream where for some reason I'd wake up in this dream and I'd go into the closet there. And it's one of those doors where you kind of just like push it up. It's like a board covering it, but I push up that board and every time I'd see like this big pile of rotten meat and flies for some reason. And then I'd wake up and like, I can't really think of a lot of more experiences the first time living there. But I remember the one time mom was saying when we're out at the movies and she heard somebody come in the door, she called out our names and everything, but we ended up coming home like an hour later or whatnot. So that's kind of weird.
Yeah. I remember that, you know, same experience, you know, exactly. Me, you, Mason, and our grandfather went out to the movies one night and our mother stayed home alone. And, you know, she's upstairs in our kitchen. It was a weird house. We had the kitchen upstairs for whatever reason. So she's up there and we have a couple different bedrooms up there. We got my bedroom, which is, we'll play into it later. It has a kind of conjoined room off of that, then like a crawl space that goes over like the back part of the house. Like it was split into almost two apartments. So she's up there beside that room in the kitchen. We got the bathroom up there and my brother's room and my mom's room. So she's up there and she clearly hears like the door open to the house. She hears it shut. She hears people walk in. So, you know, naturally she's thinking, you know, we returned. So she's hollering down the stairs or hollering down to downstairs, you know, asking us, you know, how'd the movie go? Something along those lines. And she gets no response. So she's like, well, that's kind of strange. So she like comes to the top of the stairs and she don't see her shoes or she don't hear us down there anymore. So she kind of walks down and she's looking around and we are not there. So like he said, an hour or so later, we did return. And I don't remember if initially she shared this story with us or if it was later on, but you know, she told us the story personally, and that was like one of the first strangest experience that we all experienced there. To expand on that, we've heard people, you know, kind of walking up the stairs in the middle of the night, stuff along those lines, like floorboards creaking, like someone's walking down the hallway. I remember the cubby hole off of my conjoined room by my bedroom would always just kind of open on its own. And stuff along those lines. So I think that covers like pretty much everything that happened the first time we were there. And then we'd move on to our, you know, home that we lived in all through high school, mine and Brandon's graduation. And when we went there, like these strange experiences kind of followed us. So one of the earliest memories I remember in this new house on Cartier Street was we're sitting in what would be our living room at the time. We heard like doors upstairs slam. Now it's me and my brother there. I think we moved there when I went to seventh grade. So I'm like 13 at the time. My brother's 3 years younger than me. So he's like 10 or so. And we're there alone when these happen. So we hear this doors upstairs slam and stuff like that. So we go on. Oh, I'll take you back to the Blue House. I did forget a big story. We did play the Ouija board there. And there was this girl that came up every summer. She was one of our neighbor's kids, you know, a friend that we hung out over the summer. And we did have like a kind of seance type thing. Like we didn't know what we were doing, obviously, because I was younger than 13 at the time. Probably range between 10 and 12 or whatever. So we sat there and we sat in a circle and we called the dead, or what we thought we were doing to call the dead. And I remember distinctly, like we had dry paint formulate on the wall and kind of streaked down a little bit. But back into the house on Cartier Street, we go there. We hear the noise upstairs of doors slamming while we're there alone in between, like moving stuff from our old house to our new house. Flash forward to, you know, probably a couple years later, we play the Ouija board there downstairs in the basement with the lights off. And, you know, I remember this was something that me and Brandon talked about over the phone. And he kind of, I don't know, brought back a memory that I had. I remember watching, you know, we're sitting down in the basement, huddled in a circle, playing the Ouija board. I remember we had a window down in the basement that goes up to like the ground level outside the house. I remember seeing headlights come through and I saw what I thought was a shadow being on the wall. Like this could have been chalked up to be multiple things. Like there's obviously a light coming into the room through a window. There's objects that are going to create shadow. So I'm not saying that this is an actual shadow being, but if it was, this would have been like one of the earliest experiences that we have experienced together, like sharedly. So, you know, after this, the story kind of picks up with Brandon and with his experiences with the Ouija board and playing with his friends. So I'll let him take over from here.
All right. So I kind of have like a sequence of events that I think all lead into each other. So me and my buddies, we always like to play around with Ouija boards and we always thought it was like a game, like nothing's going to happen. So this started me and two of my buddies. We were playing the Ouija board the one night and we ended up talking to a spirit or whatever. And there was two of them. And the one was a male and another one was a female, we believe. because we're trying, well, I think she said she was a girl or whatever, and we're trying to ask her her name, and the other guy, he kept butting in, and he was like, don't tell him. And we're sitting there, and my buddy had his phone over on his piano. Well, his phone started pulsating and vibrating on and off, on and off. And we thought that was kind of weird until we looked over by the door, and there was this big, it was a shadow, like a shadow man standing in front of the doorway or in front of the door. And he was like probably a couple feet taller than the door, and we're kind of just in shock and didn't know what to do. So we sat there looking at it. And finally, me and my one buddy, we just decided to get out of there. So we jumped up and whipped open the door, and everybody in the living room, like, they're like, what's going on? And we didn't even stop. We ran right out the door, and there's this patch of bamboo brush out behind the house in the trailer court here. And we looked back at that bamboo brush, and we saw these glowing green eyes. Like, I don't know, they're probably six, seven foot tall in this brush. And we actually heard like this ungodly roar, like nothing you ever heard before. And we just booked it out of there. We ran all the way uptown back to our houses that night. But while we were running up Main Street, there's this one street, if you look down it, it'll see behind this building called the Consistory. There's actually this trail across the river and a footbridge. Well, we looked across that footbridge, and there was something running like the same speed as us, almost like it was following us. So we both got home, and we kind of just forgot about it. And nothing really strange happened after that for a little while. Well, fast forward later on, me and a couple of my buddies, it wasn't the two buddies that I had this experience with either. We all decided to just go for a ride in my buddy's van. And we just decided to start telling ghost stories and whatnot. And my one buddy, he kind of seemed a little bit scared, and he didn't want to say anything. And we're trying to egg him on. We're like, come on, tell us, you got to have something. And he's like, nope, I don't. Well, we got back to the trailer court to drop him off, and I don't know what happened, but he ended up lifting up his shirt. Oh, actually, I forgot something. While we were riding around in the van there, I ended up telling them this experience we had with the Ouija board. And my one friend, apparently she says that she can see ghosts. So she's like, you know, they're both here with you, right? I'm like, yeah, I know, because I kind of just had the feeling that there were those two spirits that I talked to through the Ouija board that one night. She said they're in the back of the van with us. Well, anyways, get back to the part where we're dropping him off, and well, he ended up having these three scratch marks up his side, and his ears were starting to bleed. So we thought that was kind of messed up.
Yeah, I'd definitely say so. Now, I just got to ask, like, how, like, the blood with his ears, was this like a continuous stream, or was this just like kind of like a, you stick your finger in your ear and you have like a little bit of blood on it, or?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like barely noticeable, you know, like it's kind of like if you scratch the inside of your ear. And
yeah. Okay.
It just started to bleed a little bit. But anyways, that leads me on to a couple of years later or whatever. And we're all throwing this big party up at my buddy's, and lo and behold, we decide to get the Ouija board out again. And we're sitting there playing it, and the board's moving, and we're talking to somebody. Well, everybody thought we're messing, or somebody had to have been messing around, this and that. And well, it turns out, I guess we're talking to my one friend's deceased mother. He's the only one that knew who we were talking to. Like, nobody else would know. But anyways, it came to the point where I asked how many spirits were we talking to right now. And the board went to 7, I believe. And I asked if the spirits that are following me were here. And it said it went to yes. I'm like, are all these spirits here good or bad? and then the board went to bad. And then right after bad, it went to the numbers 666, which apparently is the number of the beast, the devil. And right after that, like, I was basically like, I'm done. And I hopped up, and we never said goodbye like you're supposed to with a Ouija board. And I hopped up, and I couldn't, like, speak. Like, I could hear people, but I just couldn't talk. No words would come out of my mouth. I went outside to where people were standing around the fire, and I kind of just stood there looking in the fire. People were, like, asking me what's wrong, and I just wouldn't say nothing. And I ended up walking over to my truck, which was parked over at the edge of the yard by the woods. And there's actually this little trail that you could drive your vehicles up to get into the yard. Well, I hopped into my truck in the driver's seat, and I ended up looking out towards that trail, and there was like this shadow figure man type thing. It looked like a man in like a tux with a top hat, but all black shadow figure. And I just couldn't talk. And my girlfriend at the time, she hopped in the truck. She's like, Brandon, what's wrong? And I just couldn't speak to her. Then finally I like snapped out of it. And I'm like, what? She's like, you wouldn't talk to me. What's wrong? And I didn't want to tell her what I saw and whatnot. She'd think I was crazy. Like, nothing. Well, I ended up telling her later on. But anyways, that leads me back to the Blue House. Me and a couple of my buddies, we ended up moving back into the Blue House. And one night I woke up because I felt like something was watching me. And there was that shadow figure from the first Ouija board experience again. He was standing in front of the door. So I'm kind of just like, what the F? And my girlfriend, she's like, what's wrong? I'm like, nothing, just go back to sleep. She went back to sleep, and I was laying there watching it, and I had one of those closet doors that kind of like fold open right next to the bedroom door, and it was cracked, and then I watched something come out of the closet, crawl across the ceiling, and it kind of just like dissipated. It was like a shadow figure, but it wasn't like a normal shadow figure. Like, you ever see like Gollum off of Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, definitely.
It was basically like that. It was like that shape. It just crawled across the ceiling. Well, I really didn't let it bother me. Like, I ended up just going back to sleep. And then I ended up waking up again in the middle of the night because I felt like something was watching me. And right at the foot of my bed, there was this man, like, in a black cloak with no face, just a white face. So I didn't know what to do at this point. So I just ended up going back to bed again. Well, I don't know, a couple days later or whatever, I never said anything to anybody about it, but my buddy I lived with, come to find out, I guess him and my girlfriend, they got into some little goofy argument, and he's like, I guess he told her, I hope the devil comes and gets you tonight. Well, he told me that same night that I saw all these shadow figures and whatnot, he told me that my buddy had my brother's old bedroom, the one with that little crawl space door. Well, he told me as he went to bed, his bedroom was actually right in that room with the crawl space door. Well, as he was falling asleep, for some reason, he felt the urge to say goodnight to somebody or something. And right as his eyes closed, he said he could remember that closet door came creaking open. And I basically assume something was like attached to me from the first time I lived in this house or something, or from that time I played the Ouija board, it just followed me around ever since. And whatever came out of that closet door or that crawl space door that night, I guess it came to the bedroom to get me. And I think that cloaked man with the white face was there to protect me, because I believe I read it up somewhere online before that if you ever see a shadow figure with a white face, he's basically like the protector or something like that. But yeah, that's basically my experience with those two shadow figures.
Wow.
kind of all mixed up and mashed up, because it happened like years in between each other, and I can't really remember every detail or whatnot. But
yeah, no, that's okay. That's fine. So Well, first off, do you still think that there's something attached to you?
Well, we actually ended up having like a falling out, and we moved back out of that house. And ever since I kind of left that house, I've never really had the feeling of those two shadow figures attached to me anymore.
Well, thank God for that. Well, and then
I've never touched the Ouija board ever again after that experience.
Yeah, I would sure hope not.
Yeah, it's crazy.
How come, my question is, what made you decide after you did it the first time and bad stuff happened, what made you decide to go back to it? I would have been so freaked out, I would have been done.
I don't know. I guess it's just peer pressure with all your friends and buddies that want to play the Ouija board too.
Oh my goodness. And then I had another question, but you guys kind of already answered it. And I was going to ask if you think the stuff from the first house had followed you into the second house.
Yeah, but I totally believe that's what happened.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot to dissect there. Like,
it
kind of feels like it followed us from house to house, like more so Brandon, because I don't know. I don't really have any experiences beyond that. Like, I've had the ones I shared with you about in the woods. But before we jump into that part of the episode, I want to kind of go back to you're riding in the car, Brandon. You get out. Your friend has been physically harmed by these scratches. Right. Do you remember how many scratches he had exactly?
I believe it was just like a 3-finger scratch across his side.
Oh boy.
Yeah, we talked about that the other night. They call it the Holy Trinity. Is that what it's called, Laura?
Or like mocking the Trinity.
Or mocking Father, the Trinity, sorry.
Yeah, like Father, Son, Holy Spirit, Holy Ghost, however you call it. Kind of like mocking it with the 3 scratches. I don't like that. And to go back to that also, the whole rotten, you said you'd see rotten meat and flies in your closet.
I remember having a dream like that a couple of times when I was young.
Like, yes.
I remember sorry, being there. And so this house, it's a massive blue house. The color doesn't really matter, but it's a massive house. And so you have, like, on the main street, you have the front of the house, and it has like a big downstairs with a like dining room on it. First, you walk in the doors and you have like a staircase that wraps up to the second floor. You got your 3 bedrooms up there, kitchen, bathroom. Downstairs, you have the living room, the dining room, another bathroom, and another like storage type bedroom. Then you have a door to the basement. But on the back side of the house, it's split into like a small, I think, 2-room apartment, one being the kitchen, like dining room combined, and one being a bedroom that has a small bathroom. Now, there was an older couple that lived there, and I don't remember if they passed away during the first time we lived there or not. But to add on that, I don't remember if this was dreams or like just talk among us being like preteen kids about, you know, like bodies being in the basement and just ideas of this. And I don't know if these were dreams again or if this was just talk among us. So I wonder if they passed into this house or passed while living in this house and they had an attachment to it. And this is why we started to hear and see different things while we live there.
It just feels like something more sinister, though, than an older couple passing away in the house. That just doesn't add up to me. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just kind of thinking out loud.
Well, I forgot to add a couple different things here. My one friend that lived with us there, he had a cat, and this cat, it would never let anybody go up into my one friend's room with the crawl space there.
Wow.
It would claw their legs and stuff, and it wouldn't let them go up there. But the weird thing is, it would let me and my buddy go up there anytime.
So that's really strange.
And I remember the one time I wasn't home and my girlfriend was there and she texted me freaking out because something threw the cat down the stairs.
Oh my God, I'd kill somebody.
And if you were there alone, you would always hear like something being dragged around upstairs. Just weird stuff like that. And the kitchen cupboards, they would open up by themselves. And right before we actually moved out of there, me and my two buddies, we went up there in the room with the crawl space door and we brought the cat up there with us. Well, lo and behold, when we opened up that crawl space door, the cat started freaking out and hissing, trying to claw open the door to get out of there, like out of that room with the crawl space door.
Yeah, they know something's not right. And also, cats are supposed to be protectors from paranormal things, going back to ancient Egypt. You know, they worshipped cats and they were supposed to be protectors for them. So, I mean, that makes a lot of sense that the cat was keeping people out of that room. And I've also heard stories where people have had alien activity in their house and a cat jumped on this one woman's chest and kept the alien away from her. So I think there's something to be said about cats.
Yeah, it's just crazy stuff.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with, you know, your whole idea on cats being protectors. I've heard that, you know, multiple times about, you know, them trying to protect their owners and trying to warn people, essentially.
Yeah.
Now, go ahead.
I just thought it was kind of weird how the cat would let us up there, but nobody else. Like, why was it not protecting us?
The only thought I have on that is that if maybe something was already attached to you, then the cat knew that and would let you back in that room. But then also, I mean, I don't think the cat would really want to be around you either if the cat knew that. So I don't really have any ideas towards that. Do you, Dylan?
No, none that I can really think of. Like, I'm not as studied in like different paranormal aspects and ideas along those lines, but yeah, essentially, if like the cat is the protector and he or she is trying to warn off like or warn other people of dangerous situations and bad spirits and stuff, if something is attached to you, I would like kind of expect it to be scared of you and potentially, you know, scratch you or something along those lines. That would make sense to me, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Now, kind of moving on, like we've had shared experiences with strange encounters in the wilderness. And like I said before, with my paranormal experiences, like with the Blue House, like I don't find them too far, like extreme. Like I've heard stories that completely blown my mind about encounters and stuff like that. So I don't think mine are more significant. I don't know if other people are fluffing theirs either, but I've had experiences up in a place called Ellis Hollow that is near me and my brother. He's had experiences up there with me. And this is kind of one that I shared with you, Laura, before. So I'll just kind of breeze over it a little bit because I'm sure people heard it on my podcast and when we've talked before in live streams.
Yep. So, yeah, definitely hit on that, though, for sure.
Get out of the Army in 2019. I need something to do on board. So I pick up archery hunting. And if you know anything about me and hunting, I'm no good at it. I walk around and, you know, I carry the gun, I carry the bow, and I go out there. I go for more of a hike, per se. If I see something, then I'll shoot at it and take it home. But I haven't got there yet. Just one time. So I'm going bow hunting and I'm an early riser. I'm up at 4 a.m. or whatever. So I think it's a good idea to get out in the woods by 5 a.m. And I know sunrise ain't till well after 6. So I'm out there and I drive out. I set up in the only entrance to these trailheads in Ellis Hollow. There's no other vehicles around. So I know I'm out there alone, unless someone on the other side of the mountain walked all the way up in and met me up top. Like, this would have took hours in the pitch black. So I get out of my truck. I have my bow in hand. I'm in camo. I'm not wearing orange because you don't have to wear orange when you archery hunt, at least where we're from. I have no light on. I'm just kind of following like the moonlight, letting it guide me out there. I go through the first gate because you're not allowed to drive vehicles back there. So I go through the gate. You get like it splits off into two trails. I take the left trail out and it kind of wraps around almost. If you follow, it wraps around looking down to the valley all the way down. So I go to the left. I'm walking out of that trail and I get to a part where I decide to cut into the thick. Like, we grew up around here. We know these woods like the back of our hands. So you probably plop us anywhere out there and we're going to find our way out. So I cut off in the dark through the thick. I walk out. I see, like, I'm bobbing and weaving through trees, jumping over logs and stuff, being as quiet as I can. I see two eyes, and the way, like, I'm watching the eyes move and I can tell it's a, you know, the head of a deer. I can watch the neck move. I can watch the head drop and I know instantly it's a deer. So I'm like, all right, well, this is a long wait, but I'm willing to wait it out. So I'm sitting there being as quiet as I can. I'm not making a sound. I'm still. I watch this deer look up, swing its head around, and bolt out of there. Right after this, the whole woods, like, die. Like, it's quiet. I'm getting chills up my spine. And, like, you know, me and you, or all three of us, I've heard all these different stories about hunters, hikers, you know, day travelers out in the woods going missing under strange circumstances. So this is running through my head right now. And the woods are dead. And I decide that I'm going to get out of here, but I'm not going to know whatever's out here that I'm afraid of it. So I'm, you know, I'm thinking it's probably a predator, because a lot of times in these situations, like, the woods will die. Like, it's like a natural thing in, you know, nature itself. They know when something's about to go down. So I turn and I'm walking, I'm, you know, kind of stepping over twigs and down logs and stuff to get back on this trail. And, like, I'm just getting chills up my spine. I feel like I'm being watched. And as soon as I hit that trail, I kind of like take up a brisk walk into a jog and run. And I get back to my truck and I get out of there. There's another situation, and I don't remember if it predates this or is after, when me and my brother, I'm pretty sure it's after now that I'm thinking about it. We were out there bow hunting together and kind of in the same area, but farther in to the right, kind of down over the embankment by these, you know, these evergreens or whatever, pine trees, whatever you want to call them. I remember sitting there with Brandon and we heard like voices off in the distance. You know, they're kind of, I don't know if you want to explain it as muffled, but you could hear like people talking, but you couldn't make out what they were saying. And, you know, last time we talked, you told me this was samurai chatter. And, you know, I remember from previous conversations with Connor Flynn, him saying the same thing. And, you know, kind of a long time after this, I remember looking up on BFRO and seeing like numerous Bigfoot sightings around this, you know, same area, kind of trying to triangulate this area. Now, I'm not saying that we heard a Bigfoot, or when I was out in the woods that I, you know, stepped into a Bigfoot's territory or whatever, but I find this, you know, event extremely strange. Now, Brandon has his own experiences with different strange encounters in the woods, so I'll pass it off to him.
Yeah, well, I'm an avid hunter and everything, and I set trail cameras in the woods up behind my mother's new house now. And, well, one day I decided, for some reason, I kept telling myself, I got to go check my trail cameras before dark, see if I got any cool pictures or whatever on there. So at my one camera, I get up there, and it shut off. I'm like, huh, that's kind of weird. Well, I turned it back on and it's still full battery. The batteries didn't die or anything. So I moseyed my way across the valley over to my other trail camera. It's probably few hundred yards away. And I get up there and it's popped open, like somebody or something was messing with it. It's popped open and it's still on and everything. And I thought it was weird because it just rained that day, but the inside of the camera wasn't wet or anything. So it had to have just been opened up. So I don't know. I didn't really think anything of it. I just closed it back up and started heading my way back down the hill towards the house. At this point, it's like 15, 20 minutes before dark. I start walking down this trail and I don't know. It was weird. All of a sudden the woods got silent and I couldn't, like, it was like I was in a different world or something. The woods got silent. I couldn't hear any cars down on the road going by or anything like that. So I slowly turn around. I look back up the hill to see if I can see anything. I didn't see nothing. So I kept walking and I just got this feeling like something like was watching me. So I end up turning around again and nothing. But this time I just hear one big twig snap. So I knew there was something, like there's something up there watching me or stalking me or something. At this point, I started kind of like jogging down the hill. Like, I got to get out of here. Like, there's some sort of predator in the woods watching me. And that's basically my experience that time. And I had an experience before this one. This was right when we moved into the house and I borrowed my buddy's four wheeler because I wanted to explore all the trails. So I went up the valley and I found this little trail cut off from the main trail and I started going up that. Well, it ended up coming to like a dead end. I couldn't go any farther. Well, I get to that dead end and for some reason, the four wheeler decides to stall out and shut off. So I didn't think anything of it. I've always had machines and stuff do that to me. So I kind of just sat there for a couple minutes and I'm looking around and I happen to look straight in front of me and I don't know, maybe 100-150 yards away. And there was like, I could see something. It was peeking around this tree and it was definitely on two legs and it had like blonde colored hair or fur all over its body. And I didn't know what the heck it was. So like at this point, my mind was telling myself like, I got to get out of here. So I look away for a second and I'm reached down trying to pull start the four wheeler. First pull, nothing. Second pull, nothing. Third pull, it fires up. I look ahead. Whatever it was, it's gone now. And I just back out of there and leave. That's pretty much all my experiences I've had.
That's really creepy. You said you felt really scared, right?
Right.
And then wasn't there another, did it happen to you, Dylan, or did it happen to Brandon where you heard your name being called in the woods?
Well, that would be one of Brandon's. Do you remember that time, Brandon, when you called me about that? About hearing a voice that sounded like mom's?
I don't know. I can't remember. I think maybe I was telling you a story I read on like Reddit about something like that.
Oh, maybe I remembered that wrong then. Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, because we're talking about Wendigos or something the one day, and I was telling him a story how this guy, he went out hunting somewhere, and the only person that knew where he was going hunting was his father. So he went to the same spot that he always did, and he decided to venture further down the valley this time. Well, he ended up going down this valley, and in this thicket, he heard his name being called, and it sounded like his brother, and his brother didn't even know where he was. The only person that knew where he was his dad, and his dad's an old man, and he couldn't venture out there and mess around with him.
Yeah, I remember that now. Maybe I tied that in wrong with your trail cam, but I remember that story distinctly because this one happened in Pennsylvania as well. It was a guy downstate. I remember reading on Reddit. He was out hunting alone. And, you know, kind of like you said, the only person that remembers or knew where he was going was his, you know, elderly father who had no way to get out there. He remembers hearing his brother call out to him while he's out in the woods. And he's completely freaked out by this, and he decides to get the hell out of there. He goes on to say his brother lives in Arizona, so there's no way he would have been able to be out there at all to, you know, pleading for help or anything along those lines. Like, I think, you know, with these different stories, like, whatever entity is out there, they're able to tap into your psyche and find someone who is, you know, close to you and try to, you know, almost, I don't know if it's guilt you into it or to draw you in by finding something you're emotionally attached to.
Yeah, playing on your emotions, exactly. Because I always kind of think, what if the stuff that mimics you isn't really bad or demonic? It's just trying to get your attention. But then to me, it just feels so just evil, almost something that is mimicking you. And to go back to that, in your first house, when you and your brothers and your grandfather came home from the movies, either that could have been a time slip that your mom saw, or it could have been something trying to mimic you guys. I don't know.
Yeah, the time slip is definitely like an interesting angle, because, you know, depending on what you believe in and if you believe that time is linear or not, mm-hmm. that would definitely make sense. And there's multiple stories about that. Then you get into like, you know, kind of different theories with CERN and yeah. what they're doing with black holes and trying to, you know, find this God particle. There's ideas of, I guess you want to call it, eternal reoccurrence. And that's where you get these stories of the Mandela effect. But yeah, if you believe that time is not linear and we're actually living parallel to other universes, that would make sense that possibly there was a slip in time right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've heard stories, you know, we've heard conjoined stories talking to different people that we associate with about seeing, you know, a young child from, I believe it was a young child or a man from a different time period entirely appear in the present day. And like, it's almost like there was a cross in time.
Yeah. Yeah. So all your forest stories are just the classic, I don't know what you want to call it. I don't want to say Bigfoot stories because we don't know if that's what it is, but it sure sounded like some of Brandon's stories were Bigfoot related, but just the forest going dead silent and getting this terrible feeling. It's just this classic story that you hear over and over again. And I don't know if we'll ever know what it is. I'd sure like to.
Yeah. And if you get down to like the, you know, the roots of things around this area, like it falls within that triangle of these BFRO sightings. Like there is one, you know, at a local, by a local ski, like a, I guess it's not a ski resort anymore. It was a previous ski resort. And there was a water truck driver driving up over this hill. It's like a mountainside hill. So to the right of it, where he would have been driving, it's almost like a steep cliffside. So he remembers driving at night, and you can look this up. Whoever wants to read about it, I'll share the link. You can look this up. He was driving, you know, at night up this hill. He's kind of turning to the right because it's like a steep hill. It kind of levels off a little bit, turns to the right before it turns back left and goes up another steep hill before it hits the peak. So there was a car in front of him at night, and he watched as it like kind of swerved to the left and then continue on, like it was avoiding something. At the same time, he watched his figure that kind of like reminded him of a, like a black bear per se, but on its hind legs. He watched this thing after the car swerved around it, dart up the cliffside, like on two legs. And I don't know about you, if you're familiar with black bears or anything, but mm-hmm. for them to walk on their hind legs, you know, I've heard it's extremely exhausting for them. So to imagine this thing running up a cliffside is completely far-fetched to me.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Around the same area, there have been local campers from, you know, the southern part of Pennsylvania coming up, flatlanders, whatever you want to call them, and they were up here camping, and they were awoken by, you know, screams in the middle of the night, unlike anything they've ever heard before. And they would go on to write, you know, on this report that they have never heard since that day anything like this. There's also like accounts of hunters being in their tree stands and watching stuff across the valley, like kind of move behind trees until it appeared, and it looked like an ape-like creature running through like the snow would have been about 2 feet deep at speeds of what they presumed to be 25 miles an hour uphill. So
holy crap. I don't want to cut you off, but just walking through the snow can be like exhausting.
Oh yeah.
And then to be running through the snow that quickly, we already, you know that they must be extremely powerful, but wow.
Yeah. And I'm not saying any of my encounters were Bigfoot related. Like I would have to see Bigfoot like eye to eye to be like, oh yeah, okay, I believe you now.
Mm-hmm. But,
yeah.
I mean, that's good though, to have a little bit of, go ahead.
I actually do have like another Bigfoot experience type thing.
Go for it.
Me and my buddy, we used to go night fishing at this spot we call the Trestle. And the one night we were down there, his truck's parked like right next to us. He had one of those lifted up trucks with tow mirrors on it or whatever. Probably like the tow mirrors were probably at least 6.5-7 feet off the ground. But we're sitting down there fishing, and all of a sudden we kept hearing these big splashes in the water. Like, and then we realized there was something on the opposite bank throwing like big rocks in the water. And where this fishing spot was at, the main road wasn't too far away. And every time a car came around the corner, their lights would flash and light up the area. Well, there was a car coming and it lit up the area. And we ended up seeing something run past his truck, and it was on two legs, and it was taller than those tow mirrors on his truck. So 7 foot tall, something throwing stuff in the water. I don't know what it'd be if somebody is messing around with us, but I don't know. It's just a weird experience we had.
Sounds like a Bigfoot to me.
Right.
Yeah. You hear stories like that all the time with, you know, them throwing stones and stuff. I don't know if it's like to physically harm you or if it's trying to warn you to get out of their area.
I almost feel like it's just a warning because, let's be honest, they can move extremely quickly and they're very powerful. If they wanted to do some damage.
Yeah, they would have. Right?
Exactly. They would. I think they just don't want you in their woods, in their territory, and they just want you out. I mean, now you do hear some stories that are really terrifying, and maybe not all Bigfoot are nice, but also too, think about maybe the mindset of the person going into the woods. Maybe they were just being a jerk and taunting the Bigfoot, or just being obnoxious and not being respectful, and that's why they had a bad experience.
That could very well be. Like, I've heard one of the craziest Bigfoot stories I've ever heard. Well, one of the second craziest. I don't know if you heard of Ape Canyon. You heard that story? Have you heard the story of Jeff Boiler?
No.
Now, Jeff Boiler is a former Marine. So I kind of get offended by that. I was in the Army, so I know a little bit about that. But Jeff Boiler was a Marine. And upon getting out of the Marines, he joined I'm going to tell this really poorly because I don't have the script in front of me. He goes on to be a cop, and he's out in the Cascade area of Oregon. So after him working his ass off for months on end, the sheriff would allow him a day off. He's like, "Hey, Jeff, you know, you've been busting your ass for me. Why don't you take one on the house?" So he's like, "You know what? All right." So instead of going home and spending the day with his wife, he's like, "I'm going to go hike the part of the Cascades that probably no one has ever been before." So he gathers up the little supplies he can a couple water bottles, some vending machine food, throws it in his backpack, and he takes off. He goes out to the trailhead, parks his truck, and takes off hiking through the woods. He's going on, and he's clearing like a great amount of distance in a short period of time. And he's like, you know, this is too easy for me. Let's go off-roading. Let's go through the thick. So he's like, all right, let's cut through here. And he's looking around, and it's absolutely beautiful out here. And he's thinking to himself, he's like, I'm probably laying my eyes on what someone else has never seen before. And he's enjoying himself out here, yada, yada. And he decides, you know, hey, it's getting late. You know, he's keeping track of how long it took him to get out here. So he's like, I need to turn around now before I get caught in the, you know, the darkness. So he pulls out his map. He lays it on a rock in front of him or whatever it might be, a log. And he pulls out his compass and he's shooting a azimuth in the direction, you know, kind of charting out his map to where he's going to go to get out of here. As he has his compass up to his face in like a compass to cheek method, which you can look this up. It's where you kind of hold the compass up to your face and you have it tilted back and you're looking at the line and you're watching like the dial on the compass. So he has it up here. So he's kind of focused through this little like crosshair, I guess you want to explain it as. And when he brings it back down, he noticed something out of the corner of his eye and he looks up and it's what he believes to be a Bigfoot. And he's like, what the hell? So he kind of turns his head to look at it. And this Bigfoot-like creature mimics him and turns its head too. So right then and there, he could tell it's intelligent and it scares the shit out of him. And depending on what story you read, one says that he pulled out his weapon and kind of aimed it at this creature. And this startled it and it freaking took off. And, you know, right now he's panicked by this. Like I would be too, if I saw something like this. So he throws all of his shit in his bag and he starts trucking it out of there. And he doesn't have any activity for like, I don't remember if it's a half an hour to an hour, something in that window. And then he starts hearing like trees all around him, like snapping and shit. So he feels like he's being followed by two at this point. So it sounds like they're trying to like kind of funnel him in and like flank him. So he takes off running and running and running until he pops out into this field and he kind of stops and he sees a deer standing there staring up at him and he kind of laughs for a moment and he has like a moment of peace until he watches deer get startled and he's like, oh shit, there's something behind me. The deer takes off. He takes off again and he ends up running out of there, getting on the trail, and he gets in his truck and gets out of there. But that was just like an abbreviated version of this story. Maybe we can share it in depth again sometime. But if you haven't heard that story, definitely look into that.
I don't know. That sounds really similar to a story that I heard also. I don't think it was the same one, but it was really close to it, and it was really scary. And the guy that had this experience, the one I'm speaking of, he never went in the woods ever again. He was this big hunter and really enjoyed it. And that was it for him. He was just done. And that's my biggest fear too, because I enjoy hiking. I love the woods. If I ever saw something like that, I think it would ruin me in the woods. I don't think I'd go back out. I don't think I could. I would just be scared the whole time.
Yeah, it's something that would imprint a memory in your head forever. Like I've heard more stories like along these lines, like with hunters and stuff and having occurrences with Bigfoot like creatures. There was another one. The guy went archery hunting and where he went, he had to drive out this road and then walk out a logging road to get to his tree stand. He went out there like about 3 p.m. to go hunting, so he didn't have much time, and by the time he got out of there, he got in the tree stand, it was already getting a little dark, so he's up there and he's just scanning around this open field and he watched this creature that looked like, he said it looked like a person in a gorilla suit, and I guess he was out there and he's like, what the fuck, dude, like get out of here. He's like, I'm trying to hunt out here. Mm-hmm. And he's like flagging it, kind of yelling at it and stuff. And it's just standing there staring at him. And he's yelling. He's like, at this point, he's thinking like maybe a protester or something along those lines, like who's anti-hunting or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And he's yelling at him. He's like, you know, this is my right. I paid for my license. This is public land. I'm allowed to be here. You need to get out of here. And he keeps yelling at it and nothing phases it. So he pulls up his binoculars and like he can see it. And what, you know, what I read, he said it looked like it looked real. It didn't look like a fake mask or anything on. Like he said something along the lines, like you could see the steam coming off the face and like all the features looked, you know, real, I guess. So I guess he ended up leaving and he got out of there somehow. I don't remember the full exact story, but yeah, they're all over like that.
Yeah. And I had just had a thought also while you were telling that story about, it seems like the hunters get it the worst almost compared to all the stories. And maybe the Bigfoot are protecting the woods and they're pissed off that people are in there shooting the other animals.
Yeah. Coming from like a human being standpoint, like, if you were sitting in your local town and you saw them, like armed or stuff, I'm sure you'd be startled too. And you'd want to keep whatever was, I don't know, quote unquote, harassing you out of there. Like you're trying to protect your own.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's a pretty good place to stop for today. I want to thank you and Brandon for coming on and sharing stories. And definitely, if you guys have anything else to share, we could come back on for another episode.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you very much for having us on here, Laura.
Yep.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me, Laura.
Thank you. All right. I'll talk to you guys later.
Yep.
See you, everybody.